Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. We've brought some incredibly senior professionals, and today I have one very, very senior professional from the corporate world, Amit Bansal. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me over here. Pleasure.
Amit is from Delhi University. He's a chartered accountant, and he's currently the managing director of Corning India. Amit, as a chartered accountant who started in finance, you are now running a very, very large company. How did you make this transition? And talk to us a little bit about your early days.
Sure. So I was born, brought up in Punjab in a way, and then I came to Delhi University, did my graduation from here, and then went on to become a chartered accountant. Then practiced with my dad, who is a tax lawyer, for a few months, and suddenly realized that this is not really what I was looking for, right? And got a chance to move to US in 97, mm-hmm. and then started up with a life sciences startup over there in California Bay Area. And we started on a junior position, and then time flew by, and the company really, really grew well. Mm-hmm. And then in 2009, we sold the business to Corning. It was a lot of learning for me in the process, because when I started with that business in California, it was just 30 employees, one location. And by the time we sold it to Corning, it was about 1,200 employees in 7 global locations.
Wow.
So it was a very, very good story to be a part of. Mm.
And this was Axygen.
This was Axygen. And, I got a lot to learn, which I'll talk about over the next few minutes. But the reason that I went from finance to the business side is because I never limited myself just to the finance piece. In a small startup environment, you have to do a lot of things. You have to wear multiple caps, multiple hats. And I took that as a challenge, right? I would go see a customer sometimes. I would handle a server. I would handle the HR. Just a small little company, but got a chance to do a lot of different things.
Amazing.
And then when time came by, when they needed a new leader because of certain issues, they picked me up. They said, you know the best about this business, because you've been with the business for so long. You've done everything that's required, right? Mm-hmm. So why don't you give it a shot? So, that's how I got to go from reporting the numbers to managing numbers. Mm-hmm. And
running your own P&L.
Running your own P&L, right? Mm-hmm. Because in a finance role, you're supposed to report, right? So it was a pretty amazing transformation to go from reporting numbers to being responsible and managing the numbers.
I can empathize completely, because I started with an MBA in finance, joined ITC, and then, within about 6 or 7 years, I moved to general management. Mm-hmm. And it's a very exciting change.
Yeah, very, very exciting.
I agree with you. And what were some of your key learnings, in this transition?
I think the biggest learning is that the responsibilities of being a general manager or a CEO of a business are different than every other role in the company, because he's not only responsible for the people, but also for the business.
Correct.
And then everything that happens around both people and businesses, right? For me, it was also a little bit of a culture shock going from an entrepreneurial environment into Corning, mm-hmm. because the transition happened once the company moved under the Corning's umbrella. Mm-hmm. For me, it was also a dual change in a way, because I was moving from a smaller company to a bigger company, and then moving from a finance role to a leadership role of a different stature.
Okay, right? That was going to be my next question. What was it like moving from a small company into such a large environment, into such a big company?
Oh, it was exciting on certain days, mm-hmm. challenging on certain days, mm-hmm. right? Depending on what was happening. Obviously, a big corporation like Corning, right, comes with lots of checks and balances, versus when you're operating in an independent environment, right, you are the boss, you are the owner, right, and you make a lot of decisions, mm-hmm. which you can independently make, quickly make, and sometimes, with the checks and balances that the big corporations have, mm-hmm. You just have to take some time.
That's very interesting. So, from you moved to the Bay Area a long mm-hmm. time back, you worked for a small company, joined this huge brand, Corning, moved back to India. Tell me, you know, how are multinationals, I mean, you know, there are Indian companies, there are multinationals. Mm. How are multinationals changing work culture in India?
You know, this is my first job here in a multinational in India, right? I moved to US at a very young age. So never got a chance to see how multinationals were working at that point.
Okay.
But over my last 7 years here in India, right, I've seen, you know, our company, for example, and other companies that I speak to, right, they're changing a lot of things, right? I think there's maybe three or four big themes that come out to me. One is trust and transparency. I think there's a lot of transparency that's happening with the younger generation that's coming in, right? Telling them what they need, what the company needs from them. Mm-hmm. I've also seen a big focus on diversity, for example, right? You know, MNCs are putting a lot more focus on hiring diverse candidates into the workforce, right? And I think there's a lot of technology enablement that's happening at the workforce. I mean, I think, you know, go back 10, 15 years, whether it's a multinational or Indian company or a big corporation, it would be hard for us to imagine people working from home or having flexible hours.
Correct.
But I think the technology is giving us a lot of chances to give this flexibility to our employees, especially in a environment like Delhi or Gurgaon, where you have lots of commutes, right? And you don't want people commuting for 2 hours. So, you know, company like Corning, right, we are very open to that idea, for example.
That's very interesting. I mean, one of the few people who has spoken about accepting working from home.
Yeah.
You know, not too many companies in India are doing it. Tell me a little bit about how this works.
I think it goes back to the original theme that I talked about, trust and transparency, right? You have to trust, right? You have to assume positive attitude on the other side, that the employee is going to do everything possible to make the company successful and to make him or herself successful, right? I think there has to be some checks and balances that the manager should put in place to make sure that the work is getting done.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as the work is getting done, like the
Because, you know, I was talking to some other guests in earlier interviews, and I did speak to them about working from home.
Mm-hmm.
And the general response I got was that I'm not sure how to manage productivity of people who are working from home. And I'd love to understand how you do it.
I think it's about result-based approach. Mm-hmm. If you are seeking certain results from your employees and they are delivering those results, I think if the results are not being delivered, then I think you question the productivity, whether it's
correct
in the office or out of the office.
Correct. And you also spoke about getting a lot of young managers and empowering them. What is your experience of working with the millennials? I mean, you yourself are very young. But, you know, compared to me, I mean, I'm much older. But what is your experience in managing millennials in companies which are, you know, such or large old companies?
I think, you know, I think I don't manage millennials directly at this point. So I get secondary feedback from my managers who are managing millennials. And I think for most parts, very driven people, I would say, right? Very clear about what they want from themselves and what they want from their jobs, what they want from the companies. Also, I think trying to balance very early on in life between work and life beyond work as well. I think the needs are changing. We keep hearing that millennials, for example, don't want to own houses or don't want to own cars. I don't know how true it is, but there's a lot of, you know, noise in the system about that, right? So, but again, I think I found the millennials that work in our office very passionate about doing good for themselves and doing good for the company.
And how easy or difficult is it to hold on to them? Do they look for careers or do they move?
You know, Corning is a company which offers careers. That's what I said. There's a difference between having a job and having a career.
Correct.
And I think most of the people that we pick up, they understand they're going into an organization which is offering a career. And I think it's been a good experience for us, actually from holding on to our people.
That's really nice to hear. You know, I have two sons. My older son is with American Express for 13 years in Singapore. And my younger son has been with P&G for 11 years in Cincinnati. And when I speak to their friends, nobody has stayed for more than 2 or 3 years with an employer.
Again, I think, you know, I'm a little bit biased in this because I've been just with two employers all my, you know, two decades of experience, you know, once with Axygen and then even Axygen got sold to Corning, right? So for me, it's kind of the continuing the same story in a way. But I think there is, you know, I think what length of employment at one employer gives you is dependability, credibility, and then, you know, it gives you some really long-lasting relationships as well. But I think we're also living in an environment where, you know, switching jobs is not a big taboo anymore. People should do what they think is best for their careers. And, you know, there are so many global opportunities right now, right? And I think it will be unfair to the younger generation to say, you know, you got to do it this certain way.
That's true. And today, most of the young people are what I call global citizens.
Yeah.
I mean, they have the ability to go and work anywhere in the world. And yet, you know, I've written this, about this many, many times, and I've said that there are only, and I'm going to put myself out a little bit on this, there are only four nationalities that make good expatriates. Americans, British, Australians, and Indians. You can have an Indian going and working for a Japanese company in America. What are your thoughts? Well, what makes Indians so easily adaptable in whichever country they go and work in?
I think the way I look at this is, you know, expats are mostly short-term assignments, right? I think the biggest strength of Indians, for example, is they've been able to establish themselves for a longer period of times in other countries as well, right? So, you know, coming and doing a project for 6-7 years in a country is one thing, right? But to go and establish yourselves and be successful in another country takes a different being altogether, right? And I think one of the few reasons that Indians become such good expats or foreign citizens, so to say, is because I think, first of all, education, you know, one of the, you know, better English-speaking population in the world, right? Beyond English-speaking countries. I think that goes very well. And I think the bigger thing is we take our culture with us. We don't go empty-handed. We take our cultures with us.
Very well said.
And you know, my family, for example, lives in Dallas right now. And we have a mandir which is about 5 minutes away from our house. We have a gurdwara. We have a mosque not so far away. So we've created our own pockets of culture in different countries. You know, I've traveled to many countries, and I don't find a country where you will not find an Indian restaurant in a big city, right? So it says a lot about the strength of the Indian culture, the big diaspora that's out there working to make their countries proud, the newly, you know, adopted countries proud, and making Indians proud at the same time. I think it's just a, you know, a great mix of, you know, great work ethics, English-speaking population, plus making sure they don't feel culturally empty when they're in a new country. So I think that helps them assimilate a lot better.
So true. So I'll share an interesting anecdote with you. In the early 90s, I just landed in Singapore, and we used to live there. And on the travelator, I found there was a very young Sikh gentleman. And I asked him, I said, you know, where are you off to? And he said, I'm going to Bolivia. No, you know, in those days, I had not even heard where Bolivia. I said, what are you going to do in Bolivia? And he says, I heard land is very cheap here. And I'm going to buy land. And I don't know where he is, but I was telling somebody, I'm sure by now he owns 5,000 hectares of land. And is a very, very prosperous farmer there. It's amazing.
Fully agreed.
So, you know, one more question before I move to Corning. You know, you said that you've been only with two of companies. You've been with Corning for many, many years. What are the advantages of staying with one company versus jumping every few years?
I think I answered that question a few minutes ago, but for me, I think there's probably no big pros and cons for either of the two approaches, right? It is about what the individual is wanting from their job, from their career, right? But you know, whether you stay with one company or you stay with multiple companies during your career, there is no shortcut to success. You can be useless sitting in one company and not grow yourself or the company, Or you can be, you know, very agile and very successful moving companies. And the reverse is also true, right?
Sure.
And so for me, I think it just depends on the individual, the kind of company he is working for, he or she is working for. You know, in a tech environment these days, you know, there's so many startups, for example, like people want to have different technology experiences. Can you get all technology experiences in one company? Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
If you need a different technology experience, you need a different culture experience, you know, you jump to another company, that will give you a better opportunity, right? So you hone your skills moving from one company to another company. And, you know, it gives you a different sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Versus staying in one company, but if it gives you a progressive path of success in form of enrichment of yourself as an individual, as a professional, plus giving you added responsibility, I don't think there is any harm to any of the two approaches.
Thank you. So moving to Corning, you know, from Gorilla Glass to television screens to fiber optics. I remember when I met you, I didn't even know Corning was so big in fiber optics. Talk to us about the various businesses of Corning.
Sure. So Corning is world's one of the leading innovators in material sciences. Right, we've been around for 160 years.
Wow.
So for a company to stay alive for this long, 160 years, you must be doing a few things right. I think what we believe is we have three things which go very deep into our ecosystem. One is a sustained investment in R&D. Have to innovate all the time to remain relevant.
Correct.
And then it's backed up by, you know, a unique combination of material and process innovation. And then we use both of these things to develop very deep and trusted relationships with our customers,
mm-hmm.
who themselves are industry leaders, right? And now obviously we use all of this in three different verticals, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
One is glass sciences, the other is ceramic sciences, and the third is optical physics.
Mm-hmm.
And we back this up with Corning's great manufacturing and engineering capabilities.
Okay.
So today we have about 70 plants across the world and more than 50,000 employees.
Wow.
So that's our global, you know, situation on how we are structured and what we do as a company. Now coming to India, we've been in India since early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've grown very nicely with how India has grown. Our investments in India are very well positioned to take us to the next step as India grows.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll talk about our contributions in India.
Mm-hmm.
So Corning Optical Communications, which provides fiber, cable, and connectivity products to the world. We're also providing similar products here in India,
mm-hmm.
To connect India.
So all the fiber optics that are going into the ground,
you know, we are a major player in the market from that perspective.
Yeah.
You know, right from the earliest deployment of fiber cable in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
That came from Corning in India,
mm-hmm.
to providing enterprise network solutions today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing everything to connect both Indian businesses and people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we saw the telecom revolution happening in India, we actually took the big bold step of setting up Corning's first manufacturing footprint.
Okay.
In 2012, by investing $100 million
wow.
in Pune to set up this fiber optic manufacturing facility.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we look forward, we see, you know, some very attractive programs from the government, like BharatNet,
mm-hmm.
and smart cities. You know, that will definitely use more fiber.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that, you have a lot of new technologies which are on the horizon, like 5G,
mm-hmm.
FTTH. We talk
sure.
about them. We hear about them.
Sure.
I think we'll continue to provide future-proof solutions. To the optical communications world here in India.
Yeah.
Our next big business is Corning Environmental Technologies. For 25 years, we've been a big partner of the automotive industry here in India,
mm-hmm.
to provide products for emissions control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Corning, with its expertise on both materials and the process, we invented a product called cellular ceramic substrates,
mm-hmm.
And the filters, which are being provided to both passenger cars and trucks and buses here in India to provide
just for the understanding of all our young and
yeah, I'm going to come to in a what, layman's language.
What exactly?
Yeah,
does
these are
this
actually
do
these are ceramic bricks, so you can say, right? And they go into trucks and buses and passenger cars.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is when the exhaust exhaust happen from the tailpipe.
Mm-hmm.
They basically filter out the gases and the particulate matter.
Okay.
Right. Now, as India moves to the next level of regulation next year, with BS6 coming in April 2020, mm-hmm. You know, we see a great opportunity for Corning to keep on providing new innovations and products for this market. We've grown very nicely in this business
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Third win, which is very close to my heart, is Gorilla Glass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we launched tough and damage resistant Gorilla Glass in 2014 to the Indian market.
Okay.
Today, Gorilla Glass is used on 7 billion devices and 45 brands globally.
Wow.
Now, India is one of the unique markets. It's probably the only growing market from a smartphone perspective mm-hmm. right now. All of the geographic markets of size are either maturing or staying flat at this point. India is still providing very attractive growth for the smartphones. We're also very conscious of how the individual users perceive their device in India. They have a unique relationship, right, when it comes to their brand consciousness, product consciousness, and value consciousness. It's a unique market for us and very, very happy to participate. And it's a very significant market for us from that perspective. Last but not the least, we have Corning Life Sciences business here in India. We bring a wide portfolio of products for life sciences research and for bioprocess production. We provide a full suite of products to the researchers in India to discover medicines in a more cost-effective way and in a more timely fashion as well. Now, India will have a population of about 1.4 billion people
mm-hmm.
by 2022, as per some UN health population
mm-hmm.
report. Now, we are also providing tools and solutions for making vaccines in India,
okay.
right, which are needed for this population, plus also some unique things.
You're making needs. Vaccines also?
No, we provide products okay. which will help make vaccines,
understood.
Right? So again, from that perspective, it's a very unique market for us. Unique needs from a volume perspective, it's a growing population, but also some of the diseases that need vaccines are also unique to India, right? So very happy to participate in the market as well.
Very interesting. So again, just in simple terms, the Gorilla Glass is really going on to all the phones, the smartphones that are.
So I was going to wrap up my discussion about Corning is that, it's a company, we impact everybody's life on a daily basis.
Amazing.
And I'll tell you how, you wake up in the morning, you check your email on a phone,
mm-hmm.
it probably has a Gorilla Glass in it, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go take your tablet or some medicine, it's probably being done on a Corning life sciences vessel or a product.
Okay.
You sit in a car, you go to work, you go to office, probably has a Corning substrate or a filter in there. And you make a phone call, it's probably using a Corning fiber optic somewhere in the world. You're watching TV, it probably has a Corning display glass.
Yes.
Right? So without even telling the world, we are impacting so many people.
Touching
everyone all the time.
That's amazing, fantastic. I mean, I didn't know it, and I'm sure, we are watched by close to 600,000 people every month. And I didn't know that, how much Corning touches. So let me move to some personal questions with you. And, first question I have is, what is the secret of your success, at such a young age, running such a large operation?
I'm a firm believer in one principle that in order to succeed, you need to be working for the right company at the right time, and above all, for the right person.
Correct.
And then you need to top it up with a lot of hard work.
Correct.
Right. There is no shortcut to success. Hard work is the only key to success. And I think I take a lot of pride in, if I look back at my career for over two decades, is I was very, very lucky to have worked for the right company with the right manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then I never shirked from hard work. I'm a road warrior in a way, right? At least in my previous life,
mm-hmm.
I was always on the road. Sacrificed my life, my family life
mm-hmm.
for a certain period of time, right, to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then, learning on the way all the time. When I moved to US, right, I even though I went as a finance person, but I saw that technology will be the next wave of evolution for business.
Correct.
So I actually put myself through education over there, went learned ERP systems, learned networking technologies. So it was, you have to learn all your life, right? As long when the moment you say,
correct,
I am learned now, the downfall starts.
True. And how do you, you said you were a road warrior and worked very, very hard. How do you manage work-life balance now?
I just wrote a column about this for my teammates, actually, and I'll narrate a few things that I think which are very, very important. I think, first of all, you have to understand both of the things are important.
Correct.
Work and life beyond work.
Correct.
One can't exist without the other. Right. I think the life beyond work can exist once you decide to retire. But as long as you are productively working, then both need to coexist.
Correct.
The important thing is to figure out the balance between the two. Right. And I think for me, the critical thing in that is figuring out, how do you manage your time, right? I think there's a difference between managing time and managing your time, right? And I think over the last few years, I've learned a little bit about that.
First, what is the difference between the two?
I think managing time is taking it just as it comes. Okay, I'm going to do this, right? Versus managing your time means you are getting ready for your time beforehand. So as an example, right, I'm always looking at my calendar a day before. Before I am, going to switch off work, it's a practice for me that for next day, I want to look at my calendar and see how my day is placed, what are the things I need to do, versus just letting it come to you, right? I actively manage my own time.
That's very well said.
Right? Yeah. And then, making sure that you have the priorities correct, So when you move at work, you know how you're managing your time. You are also at that there comes a time, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whatever your time is to wrap up work, right? Just switch off. Leave work to work, then come home to home. Right? And then
You don't bring your work home, your smartphone.
We do. I don't think so. We live in a world where we can be switched off. Okay. It has to be connectivity to the world, because emergencies do happen,
true,
right? Both at office and work, at home, right? So if you are at office and something happens at home, you will drop everything and go home. You will not say, I'm in a pocket, I will not do anything. Mm. Similarly, when you're at home and something happens. Mm. But again, I think the key is planning. Mm. The other thing that I feel very important is to make sure that, you are who you are because of your family and friends. So develop and nurture those relationships. Don't ignore them. Then I also believe, very highly in fitness. I think you have to be a corporate athlete. If you're not physically fit, you will not be able to do justice to either of the two things. So,
absolutely.
So please dedicate time to that. And I think everything else will sort around it. And again, I think the biggest thing is sometimes we are overloaded at work and we suffer in silence. Don't do that. Talk to your manager. Talk to your boss, say, I have too much of a workload. Here's my list of priority things. Think I can probably do these things in the right way, in the right quality, versus trying to do everything and not at the right quality. So figuring out the balance between quantity and quality is going to be very important as well.
Very interesting. You answered my last question, which would have been, what is your advice to young people? But I think that's some great tips. So I'm going to come to my last question. This question I ask every guest, because a lot of people who view our shows write in to us and they say that we didn't realize that successful people can have failures. And so the question that I have is, what are your learnings from some of your failures?
I think I am who I am because of my failures. I'm not I am because of my successes. I think the biggest opportunity that everyone has is to learn from the failures. So I think I was thinking about this, and for me the biggest failure was to disown my own body. So up until 2005, I was a very obese guy, you know, and I was not taking care of myself. I was borderline on a lot of lifestyle-related diseases. But then I woke up one day, I said, if I have to grow for my family and for my work, I need to be a lot fitter. So I put myself on a journey to get a lot fitter. So for me, you know, my biggest learning, my biggest success, apart from my professional field, is managing my own self properly. And if I didn't do that, I probably would be in a very, very different situation as an individual. Because without health, nothing matters. But having said that, you know, professionally, I think we go through many shortcomings, a lot of failures. It's for the individual to understand that what can they learn from it. Professionally, I think I've been lucky in a way that you know, I've seen plateaus, then I've seen highs. Never seen, you know, really myself taking a dip in my career, right? But you know, for me, I think learning the people piece is very important. How to deal with people, how to manage people, especially for me, right? Coming from a small company environment and moving into a company which had at that point 30,000 plus employees, it was a big culture shock. Sure. And I failed myself so many times from a people perspective. But then I had a great boss at that point, and she told me, you know, how to do things and how to manage yourself in a very big organization. So I learned. You know, when we sold our business to Corning, there was about 1,200 employees, a lot of senior management, right? I would say maybe, you know, I can count the number of managers who survived the big company culture, right? I can count them on my fingertips, right? So people who learned the culture, they survived.
Wonderful. So Amit, thank you very much. This has been an absolutely incredible interview with you. I wish you lots of success. I wish Corning lots of success.
Thank you so much.
And I look forward to chatting with you again sometime.
Thank you so much for having me over here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.